You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
These guys survived the David Kahn era of Timberwolves basketball and lived to tell about it. It's Flagrant Howls.
All right, Kyle is vacationing in Hawaii here. So much like the Timberwolves, Jim Peterson, we're going to put up a fight shorthanded here. The Nuggets better watch out for us right now. That's all I have to say.
Well, we got a little size in the lineup right now, too. So, you know.
Speak for yourself. I've got Muggsy Bogues size, if that's the type of size you
want.
That's
okay. We got Ross who can like pinch it. He can step in here once in a while too. He gives us some like mid-range jump shooting ability.
Yeah. Ross is like our TJ Warren. He can kind of come in, little mid-range game, you know, right. Box somebody out.
Right.
So yeah, we were talking before we cracked the microphones. I went to one college basketball game this year. It was the Gophers' ugly loss against Indiana. Have you been to a college basketball game this year?
Oh yeah, I went to a couple Gopher games. I did go to the Northwestern game. Actually, one of those, I think that might have been the only Gopher game I made it to. It's not because I don't want to, because I love Ben Johnson and Dave Thorson are two of the greatest guys ever. I want to support them, and I do support them. It's just that you know the schedule doesn't allow it really. And then it's really two things. I love Gopher basketball, but I'm not really a fan of college sports. I don't know if this is a very unpopular take, but I just don't enjoy college football. I don't enjoy college basketball at all. I think in some ways I've enjoyed some of the women's games. I probably watched as much women's basketball this year as I've watched men's college basketball. So
yeah.
I don't know if I'm alone in that. I think that might be a lot of people's sentiment.
I've
seen a lot of the Clark games this year.
I mean, and despite, because I'm kind of with you, like it's hard too, because you don't recognize as many of the rosters in the 90s. I sound like an old curmudgeon now. The 90s and 2000s guys were staying longer, 3-4 years. You saw the same players on different teams. So target, but none of this is going to stop us from still getting pissed when our teams get bounced out of this bracket that we both have an eye. So you're like one game in and you already have BYU, you're ripping up your bracket. Bad news.
Well, no, I was going to tell you, full honesty, I'm in a family pool on my wife's side, and they take it pretty seriously. We do this thing on CBS Sports. You can sort of get a group together, and you can have a whole group that's competing for a championship too. So you're in your own bracket with your family or friends, whatever. And I was under the gun. I hadn't filled out a bracket, so I just did the Wally Zerbiak autofill pick. And Wally picked BYU over Duquesne, so my bracket's already busted. Way to go,
wow.
Wally.
Wally, man. That loser, Wally Szczerbiak.
Yeah. So, Wally, I'm going to let you hear about it, bro. I mean,
by the way, dude, Dan, speaking of Gopher basketball, so Richard Pitino and New Mexico, they won the Mountain West tournament, and they're an 11 seed. They play later. 15 seed Long Beach State, Dan Munson is – it was like a two-point game at halftime against Arizona. And he's feeling – because they let him go on Monday and last Monday and said, if you want to coach the conference tournament, you can. And then we'll say goodbye and you can pack your office. They win the conference tournament. And he's like, you know, he's Seinfelding it now throughout the NCAA tournament. So I'm wishing Dan Munson the best here in this 15 versus 2 game.
Can I tell you a funny story about Dan Munson? Two things. Dan is a great guy. Mm-hmm. And his dad was a great coach at Gonzaga. But Dan, when he was at Minnesota, he did one of the best outreaches to alumni that I'd been a part of. He was asking former players to come sit on the bench, which
wow,
I hadn't had any of that happen to me before or since. No coach has ever asked me to come sit on the bench as a honorary coach, you know? And so the night that I did it was when the Gophers were playing Oregon. This is probably, I don't know, 2000. And so they were playing Oregon that night. Blair Rasmussen was playing for Oregon that wow. night. Michael Thompson was with me. So Michael had come back to do TV. I jumped back to radio with Chad, and Michael Thompson and I were going to Williams Arena for the first time since Michael had played. Michael had not been back to Williams Arena since 1978.
Wow.
So it was going to be the first time that Michael had been back inside Williams Arena.
That's amazing.
So we go, Dan asked both Michael and I to sit on the bench. And so we're sitting on the bench, and at halftime, we were asked to come down into the coach's locker room and be inside the coach's meeting. So, you know, I'm doing radio with Chad, and Michael's doing TV with Hanny, and we're supposed to be two flies on the wall, right? Well, we get down into the coach's locker room when they all start meeting. Michael starts going, well, you know, I think you need to get out of the zone. I think you need to, like, you know,
Michael. Dan, give me the pen. Give me the pen. Yeah.
I was elbowing Michael. So, Michael, what are you doing? Like, just relax. I mean, like, it was really funny. Dan laughed it off. He's a good sport about it. The other one was later on when things were kind of unraveling for him, and he and I were actually very friendly, and I really liked him a lot. And he was getting roasted by Sid Hartman and all these people were, you know, like the end was near for him. Yeah. Right?
When Sid turns on you,
yeah,
it's over. Yeah.
And so I was sitting like literally in those first row seats right behind the bench. And so I'm sitting there with my wife, and Dan looks down and he goes, oh, it's nice to see a friendly face.
Just sweating bullets.
Oh, man. I tell you what, man. Coaching is a hard job.
And but Gonzaga had been competitive but had not really made a run until the 99 run that he went on to the Elite Eight, if I remember right. And then the Gophers come calling. But that was such a hard spot for him. And we will talk Timberwolves, by the way, audience. Don't worry. We've got a lot of Anthony Edwards stuff. We will get there. But he took over a sanctioned program. So it's like, hey, now Gonzaga with Mark. And Mark Few was an assistant under Dan Munson for those years. And they were assistants together throughout the 90s. But how do you say no to a Big Ten job of that magnitude? Obviously, if he would have maybe known how it played out, maybe he stays at Gonzaga, but life-changing money and a tough situation for him, man.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy for both. Richard Pitino was a character, you know, Dan Munson's great, pulling for both of them, but I'm more pulling for Ben Johnson because I love him. I think he's great, and he's in a tough situation. All these coaches are now with NIL and the transfer portal, but I think if anybody can get it done, it's going to be Ben and it's going to be Thorce. Yep.
What a turnaround, man. I mean, it was from a year ago where is Ben, who are they going to replace Ben with, was the conversation a year ago. And now it's like, you know, maybe this gets spoiled by the time people listen to this, but I hope they win the NIT. Let's hang an NIT banner and get some momentum.
Love it.
The barn. So, okay. On the Wolves front, I hate being the moral victory guy, but Jim Pete, two different times this season, a Timberwolves loss has elevated my opinion of the team. The first one was the Boston game, the back-to-back, where they wind up because of, was it weather or travel logistics? You guys, you're flying into Boston the day of the game, shorthanded against the best team in the NBA, up by like 9 points with 3 minutes to go. Just show, could have totally mailed it in. Conley, I think Conley might have been out that game. I can't remember exactly, but just a schedule loss. And they fight for 48 minutes and then overtime and you wind up losing. Wow, this team shows fight. That game the other night against Denver was the same thing for me. You're missing three-star big men. It's a back-to-back. You're traveling. Nobody would have really faulted you for just losing by 18 points. And instead, you have a three-pointer with a chance to win the game. I don't know. I come away thinking I'm much more impressed than I was 2 days ago.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, the Boston game, we beat Orlando. It was a very workmanlike game in Orlando. Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert and Naz Reid all played fantastic in that game. And it was going to be difficult because the flight from Orlando to Boston is, I mean, four hours, whatever. Actually, it ended up turning out shorter than I thought because they really put the pedal to the metal. There was weather on the coast. The entire eastern seaboard was storm central, and what they thought was best for us to fly the next day, which is what we used to do in the NBA, by the way. We'd play four games in 5 nights when I played in the NBA, and, you know, so obviously you're flying on the day of the game twice for back-to-backs, and we flew commercial. So we had to go, like, super early and sit at the gate with you and Ross and all the other normies.
Idiots, yeah.
but it was great. But it's like, you know, to me, like, I almost felt like one of the reasons why they competed as they did in Boston was because we did do that. Because you had more of a normal schedule. You were back at the hotel. We knew we were going to do it from the arena. We didn't, like, go to the airport and then turn around. We knew from the arena that we were going to back to the hotel. And then guys just kind of, I think they got rest, you know, I think they got regular rest. We left it like whatever, 9 a.m. So it wasn't super early. We got into Boston like at 12:30. You got time to get some rest and they played well. And Rudy and Mike didn't play in that game, by the way. Rudy didn't play either. So they went back to Minneapolis. And so there was no Rudy Gobert, but yeah, that Boston game was one of the more memorable ones because they easily could have won that game. It was when they were having all those fourth quarter problems, you know, executing end of game and stuff. So the Wolves are just 1-4 in overtime too. So they have not had a lot of overtime success. And some of those overtime games, well, we just had one in Cleveland. I mean, that game was stolen from us by the referees. I think it was a case. And I'm still upset about the elbow that Jokic did to Monte Morris. He did a post move crab dribble drop step and he like elbows Monte Morris in the jaw. It was the same play that Rudy Gobert was called in Cleveland in the fourth quarter. I don't know if you remember that. Rudy had a drop step against Jared Allen that, you know, hit him in the chest. But so like Rudy's was in the chest and they called it a flagrant foul. And it didn't change the game because, you know, Jared Allen did go 1 of 2 and they did miss the shot when they got the ball back. But anyway, it's not been good. But the Denver game, the way they fought, and this is what I say, Phil, I say, and I've said this on the broadcast a couple of times, that sometimes a necessity is the mother of invention. And so having the three bigs out allows Chris Finch to try things that he wouldn't normally do, putting Kyle at the five. And in that Denver game, they really scrambled. The way that they were able to get into rotation is something you can only do when you have a smaller lineup. And the way that they were able to cover and then have elite level defenders like Jaden, like Nikhil, like Ant, J-Mac when he was in there, Monte's very good, Mike is smart. Kyle is just so high level in terms of his anticipation and reading of the situation. They did something in that game that was very interesting. And they did it on the first possession. They doubled Jokic. That's something that you don't want to have to do. If you play against Denver, if you start doubling Jokic, now you're getting into rotation. Not everybody can do that, but they doubled Jokic probably 10 or 11 times in that game, and they rotated the heck out of it. Even if they scored, they still covered. You know what I mean? Like, it was just very impressive, and they probably had four or five of the most incredible defensive possessions of doubling, rotating, covering, getting stops, and that's how they got back in the game in that third quarter and why it was close at the end.
Yeah, they also, in the first half, I counted four or five missed layups or just like little, even uncontested sort of restricted area shots that the Wolves missed that would have made the game different. I think if you give Luka Garza eight of the same looks from three, I mean, he had some wide open looks too that, and by the way, it's going to be Naz Reid that's taking those threes or Kat that's taking those threes in a playoff series. You know, put it this way. I don't have the box score in front of me, but just remembering it from the other night, the Nuggets shot 52% from the field, 52% from three. The Wolves were missing three all caliber big men, and the Nuggets had a rebounding advantage of like 12 or 13 extra rebounds over the Wolves.
It was 12. Yeah, it was 49-37. Yeah.
And they almost lost. I mean, if you're the Nuggets, maybe I'm just being an overreactive homer here, but the way the Wolves played the Nuggets in the five tough games in the playoffs last year without Jaden, without Naz, the way they played them a couple nights ago, I don't know. If I'm the Nuggets, I hope the Nuggets, we'll take the one seed. Wolves, you have the two seed, so we don't have to deal with you until the Western Conference Finals. I would not want that smoke if I'm the Nuggets.
Well, I just think that, again, you know, Chris Finch was able to, has been able to do some things now the last couple games of being able to kind of try stuff. And so I think that the fact that they can play small like they did with Kyle at the five, and the way they can fly, run, and rotate. And their rotations were a thing of beauty. Like, just going back and watching the video again, I'm going to attempt to, you know, get some of those clips. Sometimes when you show defensive clips in a pregame show, you know, you have a package of them. Sometimes these packages can get kind of long, and you know, TV is, Phil, you don't want to have these big long packages, but
bring them to us. We'll do it. Let's do an extra YouTube breakdown. I think the audience needs to see the long form.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, like, it's just, you know, when you're watching these clips and, you know, you want to stop and start them and rewind them and like, and just kind of really look at the technique that's done and the decision-making that's being done in real time by these really high level players. And then the coaching staff to be able to put the game plan together and also to make adjustments, because the Wolves didn't play the same way in the second half that they played in the first half.
Yeah.
They gave up 70 points in the first half. So that's when you start making adjustments and you start demanding that players do stuff. And this is where I say, like, Chris Finch has been so great in the coaching staff as well, the way they're able to communicate with players and get them to do stuff, because it's just high level stuff. And it was just really fun to watch them compete the way they did on a national stage, because it was on NBA TV.
It was
a lot of people were watching that basketball game and they wanted to see that, you know, Minnesota Denver matchup. I just think that if I'm Denver, I'm a little bit afraid, just because, you know, of what you just said about how we almost took them down with a depleted roster. You bring Towns, Gobert, and Naz Reid back, and we've got multiple ways that we can play.
Yeah.
This is Tom Bernard. Can't get enough of sports talk with Phil Mackey and Judd Zolgad? Tune in to the new Tom Bernard Show podcast Monday through Friday as Phil and Judd join me to discuss the latest sports headlines and whatever else comes to mind.
Just download the Tom Bernard Show app wherever you get your podcasts, or visit TomBernardShow.com. It's another way to get more from me and Judd talking sports and having fun with Tom, and it's all at your fingertips. Download the Tom Bernard Show app now and join the conversation. By the way, I was telling Judd this the other day on our other podcast, or it might have been, we actually, I think it was on Flagrant Howls. We did a day after show, and I have two major regrets in terms of leaving sporting events early in my life. One was a 2009 Twins game where Jason Kubel, they were playing the Angels. They were down a bunch of runs. It was kind of a nondescript regular season game. And I left early. I can't remember why. and Jason Kubel hits for the cycle, with the final hit being a go-ahead grand slam in like the bottom of the eighth inning. Dick Bramer just losing his mind as I'm watching on TV at home. The other one was the Kevin Love 30-30 game against the Knicks from like 2011.
Wow.
And that was a bad team. They had maybe 14 wins all year or something. And it was halftime. They were down by 8 points, whatever it was. I think Love had maybe 10 points, 8 rebounds. And I was going to every game and I just wanted to go home. I was tired, had to work the next day. I went to the first half of the Denver game, Jim Pete, sat behind our guys, Johnny Kay and Dane Moore, up in the media section.
Sure.
And I had it planned. My wife was going out of town, and I had some stuff to get done. I'm going to watch the first half, and we'll see how it goes. I'm probably going to leave at halftime. They are down by like 13 points. Their top three big men aren't playing. I left the game at halftime, and I got home. And you and Grady are, you know, they cut it to three. Yeah, and I'm watching at home trying to figure out, do I want them to win? Am I going to have to put this on my Mount Rushmore? I guess I'm learning my lesson. Never leave a sporting event early.
Well, I mean, you know, you got things to do, man. Your wife is getting ready to go out of town. You're being loyal.
Trying to be a good husband, you know? Yeah.
Well, I don't really think I have to think about that, if I've done that before, where I've left a sporting event early and then it turned around. No, I've stayed. I probably would have left the Vikings game when they played the Colts.
Judd did. We summoned Judd because we do a post game show on Purple Daily YouTube channel, Vikings Vent Line. And we are texting. We said, the audience wants us to start the Vent Line in the third quarter because they're so mad. So, Judd, why don't you leave the game, go into the studio? And it wound up being even better because you can just see the regret on Judd's face as the game-winning field goal goes through, and he's mouthing to himself, oh, my God, I left. I left the greatest comeback.
Well, the greatest thing is that, you know, Michael Grady's an Indianapolis kid, you know, and he's, you know, he's been to a million Colts game because he worked in the media in Indianapolis, and he had to sit there and watch that whole thing. Oh, come back.
Torturous, man.
Oh man, he was a great sport about it though, but it was like, that's one of the great sporting events I ever just stuck around for. I watched that game at home and I did not turn it off. I stayed with it the whole time. And the other one was I had a $100 bet with Dave Benz, and I forget what Super Bowl was, the New England Patriots Atlanta Falcons Super Bowl, when the game was over. And Benz didn't show up. I had a Super Bowl party at my house, and Benz didn't even show up for the first half when I just grounded into him, you know, because the Patriots just killing Atlanta. He shows up for the second half when Atlanta starts coming, you know, it was the other way around. I had Atlanta. He had the Patriots, and it's when the Patriots kind of, and Benz was like doing this annoying clap in my house. I was so annoying. I wanted to punch him in the face so bad. I had to give him $100 to really chap my hide.
Man,
No, it was great though. It was great. I just wish they could have pulled it out. I wish Ant would have hit that three at the end, and Minnesota could have won in overtime. The only overtime game they've won all season long is at home against Boston, the other great Boston game.
Yeah, man. So. There's been actually on the Anthony Edwards front. So, I think my favorite thing about that performance was, when you go into a game and you're already depleted offensively, even like at full strength, they have two main offensive options. Naz Reid is in the mix. So your other offensive options are gone. And you look around the starting lineup and it's a bunch of defensive guys. It's Kyle Anderson, Jaden McDaniels, and then you know that Luka Garza is going to play 20 minutes. And I would think the temptation for a lot of players of Ant's caliber is to go 2005 Kobe Bryant and shoot the ball 39 times and just say, well, this is the night where I'm just going to sling it 39, 40 times and we'll see what happens. And he resisted that urge to get open looks for everybody else, to get open looks for Nikhil, open looks for Luka Garza even. And I think just getting the ball moving around, I don't know, maybe you disagree on this, but I thought it showed a level of maturity and basketball sense by Anthony Edwards to not just bulldoze his way for 40 shot attempts on a night where I think he probably could have.
Well, that's one of the things that Grady and I have marveled at. Even when he had 44 against Indiana, he had 35 shots that night. It didn't seem like he had forced anything. And through this time without Towns, I think Ant's done a really remarkable job of getting his teammates involved and still carrying a heavy load. Like, he's still averaging 30 plus points a game in this stretch of games. But I think that there are times when he does overcook, you know, like he, when he gets cooking, and we've all seen Ant go on those boomlets, those runs that he can go on. And sometimes he can overdo it. And I think he overdid it a little bit in this game, where he took the wind out of the offensive sails a little bit. But I think that Dane Moore had a really great tweet. You know, these guys go in the locker room after the game and they do a great job interviewing these players, and they get really, and Dane particularly, just because he's so insightful, Dane does a great job of getting to the heart of the matter. And I think he talked to Mike Connolly about that very topic, and Ant realized when it was happening. So like now he, you know, before he didn't realize, but now he realizes, and I think he was trying to do something about it. And Mike just gave Ant a lot of credit for coming to the conclusion himself. So there, I mean, he's 22 years old, man, and he's learning so much, and he's this last road trip. I tweeted this out. Like, I will never forget this last road trip, and it's all because of Ant and the way that he played. Even though the Wolves lost two games, the Cleveland game was kind of taken from him. As I said, the Laker game was just about the size disparity that they had. But the block in Indiana, the game-winning play, and the two games in Utah, and then the comeback in Los Angeles against the Clippers. I mean, Anthony Edwards is just next level. And those performances in Utah might have been two of the grittiest performances. And I think that all those – Kyle Anderson deserves a lot of credit. Mike Conley deserves – I mean, all those guys just gutted it out. And just one of the most memorable road trips of my 26 years.
You saw the on the bookends, the block of the year in the NBA and the dunk of the year at the end of the road trip. Yeah. Same road trip. It's crazy.
I mean, yeah. And then, but the comeback too, Grady and I were talking about, we didn't do the Clipper game because it was on TNT, of course. But there were a bunch of defensive sequences where Anthony Edwards just made incredible plays. Well, they all did, but like there was a play in particular that Michael and I were marveling at, where Ant got a steal on Paul George, Minnesota gets the possession, and he goes down and just attacks the basket. And it was one of those demoralizing plays that turns the tide in the game.
Yeah.
And the body language of Paul George, you know, after that play was just, it was just so satisfying, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, I don't know, you could go back and look, it wasn't just those two plays. There were so many plays. I mean, there was one three that that Ant hit in that second game in Utah that was just such a key shot. Like, he just came down and canned it, and he's standing right by Finch. He turns around, he goes back to run to the defensive end. He slaps a high five. It was kind of a side five. It wasn't like a high five. It was like a side five with Finchy on the sideline. I'll just never forget stuff like that. That's the kind of stuff that just makes memories. And the legend of Anthony Edwards is just growing, and it's must-see TV, right?
Yeah, there's a certain, I don't know, maybe I'm just romanticizing basketball and the KG era, but I feel like being able to be the conductor of the arena, in a sense, is the sign of a true superstar in the NBA. I mean, there's certain guys like Tim Duncan didn't have that personality, and you can still do it with being more subdued. But there's just something about, you're trying to get 15, 18,000 people, if you're playing a home game, to bring the energy with you. And I just think all those times where KG would make a great defensive play, grab a rebound, out, like get something going, thumping his chest, standing on the scores table. Anthony Edwards has that ability to just wrap 18,000 people around his finger inside Target Center, or the other way around on the road, and just take the life out of an opposing crowd in a way that not many guys have in the NBA. And I don't know like how to quantify that, but I feel like that energy that he creates matters in the NBA.
Yeah. You know, there's a famous photograph. I think you can Google it. I haven't Googled it for a while. But there's a famous picture of KG, like like the Messiah. You know what I mean? Like he's down at one end and he's like has his arms up like he's the Messiah. And I just remember like when he would do that, they come out and they play whatever, Welcome to the Jungle. It's like post, it's coming out of a timeout after the other team called a timeout to stop a tide, to stem a tide or whatever, and or break a run. And KG can, and he would get the crowd up and he would do that and would just like send him into a frenzy, you know. And Ant did that in that last game at home. Like he made a shot, he was like going down, you know, he was like exhorting the crowd, you know, as he was going circling back to the bench. It's just special when you have an athlete like that. And Target Center has been the place to be all season long. And it's going to continue to be that way. And I feel so lucky to be able to do what I do and to do it with great people and to be with Grady. And Grady is even taking it to another level too. Like Grady's ability to like be dramatic, to be like, you know, he's always so measured, and like his the quality of his voice is just so, it's so next level. But then his knowledge of the game and his sense of dramatic moments, he's just like Ant, you know. So it's like a perfect pairing, you know, to be a part of all this, you know what I mean? And hopefully I'm adding my part of it too, you know. Like I'm just trying to bring the, you know, 26 years of experience and whatever insight I add. But like, it's just the whole thing is just so great. Rudy, Mike, Jaden, I mean, like the whole Kyle, like this, it's just perfect. I don't want it to end almost, you know. I want it to keep going, and I want our fans to be able to enjoy all this.
Yeah, no, and yeah, you're being modest, but you are, and you've been through a lot of dark wolf seasons, and you guys are a great pairing, man. It is. I know, you know, I think, was it, did you tweet something or were we texting? I mean, you've compared Grady to some of the best NBA play-by-play guys in the country. And it is possible that at some point, much like Kevin Harlan 25 years ago, that he goes on to bigger, better things. But he has added such a great flavor to this resurgent franchise. And it's been a blast, to watch him grow and to watch, you know, you guys grow together and Anthony Edwards at the same time. It has the same vibes as kind of the mid to late 90s and the first time this franchise rose to prominence.
Yeah, well, no, so like when Ant, I was going to tell you this too as an aside. When Ant did the dunk, and when he completely like started looking at his left hand, I was tweeting out why I didn't react that much. Cause I was like, it was the greatest play I've ever seen from Ant, but other than the dunk, but like him grabbing his hand. And, you know, we're kind of trained not to speculate on injuries. The team doesn't want you to speculate on injuries. The players' management team and agent, they don't want you speculating about injuries. So I'm trying to think of what to say that's going to not speculate about the injury. I kind of feel like I knew what happened, but I wasn't 100% sure. I didn't, but I'm thinking this could be the greatest play and in the most tragic play of the season. Because if Ant had broken his finger, then he would be out probably, you know, I mean, like he probably, so I just chose to let the pictures do the talking. Cause I think that in sports, sometimes people talk too much. And I think that it's better to lay out and Grady has the same sensibility too, by the way, because Grady doesn't overtalk either. If you go back and watch that whole sequence, we didn't say a lot. Like his initial call was awesome, right? The way that he went, the way that he called it. But I just was so upset about like Ant could be really super hurt. So I got a story about this after the fact. So Ant goes back to the locker room, and David Hines, who's one of our trainers, does just a great job. This training staff is so good. They're so cool to travel with and how attentive they are to everything. But David Hines goes back there, and he eases Ant's finger back into the socket. He had dislocated his finger. And so David Hines eases it back, and he's got to go back out and shoot the free throw or else he can't come back into the game.
Yeah.
And so like they're doing all this, like, you know, is it broken? So like trainers just know, because I mean, if you look at any NBA players, like have you ever seen Larry Bird's hands, how gnarled up they are? Like Like you dislocate fingers all the time, you know, whether you're, you know, jamming it into the forehead of a player that you're dunking on, or whether you, you get the basketball, dislocate your finger or whatever, happened, get it caught in a jersey. He had to ease it back in, tape it up, and he had to come back out and shoot a free throw. So I don't know. Just it ended well, but in that moment, it's just you're always sort of like, what's the best way to handle this situation? I had actually had two fingers dislocated. I was playing one on one with Šarūnas Marčiulionis back when I was playing for the Golden State Warriors, and Šarūnas was so strong. Like he's one of the strongest human beings I've ever been around. And so I'm playing one on one against him before the game. We're in our, you know, game uniforms or whatever. And I'm playing one on one, and I slapped down. I was going to strip the ball from him as he was going up, and I got all ball, and I hit it as hard as I could, and Rooney just powered up right through me and laid it up, and my hand started hurting. I looked down at my fingers, and both of my fingers were bent backwards.
Oh,
they were like literally bent, you know, bent
backwards. Like at the middle knuckle.
The middle knuckle, both of them, my index finger and my middle finger, were bent backwards. And I just was so surreal looking. I'm looking at my hand. I'm going like, this is not good. So I just ran back to the locker room and went to the trainer. And Tom Abdenauer just takes my finger and he just eased it back into the joint. And I taped him up. And
shooting hand or non-shooting
hand? Shooting hand.
So that's the thing about Ant.
I didn't shoot a lot in those days, Phil. Like,
and that's like, at least for Ant, and he had against the Nuggets, he had, I think his two middle fingers
points.
They were taped together like a Ninja Turtle. That's probably why he didn't shoot 40 times, actually, now that I think about it.
It's just a great memory, though. I mean, this is just more of Anthony Edwards and his legend. You know, just unbelievable.
It's a blast, man. Yeah, it's so much fun to watch. We're getting closer to the playoffs here. And I think maybe next week when Kyle's back too, we should carve out some time. The Eastern Conference is going to have like a 35-win Hawks team is going to be in the play-in. The Western Conference right now, Jim Pete, if the playoffs started today or the play-in started today, the four play-in teams would be the Mavericks, Suns, Lakers, and Warriors. I mean, you literally have Hall of Famers up and down, some of the greatest players of all time fighting to play Thunder, Nuggets, or Timberwolves in that first round. The West is going to be pretty wild in about a month.
Don't forget about the Houston Rockets, too, because they've Ime Udoka's got them rolling. They've won six in a row, and they've won eight of ten. So they're looking like they're pretty formidable. We're going to see them before the season's over too. We play them towards the end of the season here. So it's going to be one of the 10 home games that the Wolves have on this stretch. So,
yes. Yep. So don't cross that one off as an automatic win, I guess. So before we say goodbye to Jim Pete, I just want to shout out our friends at First Equity Mortgage too. So David at First Equity Mortgage is a 20-year season ticket holder of Wolves and Lynx. You see him roaming around. A few years ago, I had a great experience refinancing my home at the time with First Equity Mortgage. And I did some counting. 20 of my friends and coworkers have had great experiences with First Equity as well. 24 years in the market. They're local. They work fast. They have a great reputation in the community. You know you're getting a great experience and a Timberwolves fan when you work with David at First Equity. FEMORT.com. That's FEMORT.com or go to scorenorth.com, keyword David. So I've been trying to look over and see if there's any other crazy things happening here. It looks like our Long Beach State miracle with Dan Munson appears to have stalled out in the second half here. So we'll see what happens, Jim.
Magic's over. I'm a little disappointed that Ross never popped in. He said he was going to pop in and join us.
But Ross, what are you doing back there?
I was utterly repulsed at the finger story and couldn't find a chance to hop back. And now you guys, as the kids say, you guys were cooking pretty good without me. I did get a chuckle when you talked about people knowing not to talk too much. And I thought to myself, boy, I don't know anybody like that who talks too much.
That's a hint. That's a hint to Ross to not jump in, I guess.
who could that be? Hey, Jim, can I ask you one quick question before you bolt?
Sure.
On the Wolves and home court advantage and the vibe at Target Center, I thought watching the game on, was it Monday night that Phil left early too and almost lived to regret it?
It was Tuesday night.
I mean, the vibe's been great in there all year, but on TV, it was fantastic on Tuesday night. You talk to people around the league. What are other coaching staffs, analysts, players saying about having to play at Target Center? This isn't your older brother's or even father's Target Center to come into anymore. Is that getting around the league a little bit, that it's a bit more of a volatile place to play these days? I know the record's slowed down a little bit or come back a bit, but some of that's more injury related than anything.
Yeah, no, it's become a harder place to play for sure. People are talking about it. I do hear at the analysts and play-by-play guys, we talk about the energy in the building and stuff. And even our players have talked about it too, that they notice it. The noise matters. I mean, if you're making all this noise when they're trying to execute, it does. That's why home court advantage matters. But I just think it's interesting. The Wolves have been so good this year. They actually have more road wins than they have home wins right now. They've got 24 road wins and 23 home wins. But obviously that shows you a little bit of the home road disparity. That's why we're going to get some of this stuff back here towards the end of the season and play more home games. But we've been on the road for a long time. And I just don't. There's only a few places that we play in that are as loud as Target Center. One of them is Boston. One of them is Madison Square Garden. I think those two are two of the hardest places to play. I think Boston might be the hardest place to play because when they get all revved up, it is really loud in there. But I think Target Center has become really, really hard to play. And I just is – I mean, when you're in the building, the energy is amazing, right? I mean, it's our fans ridiculous. Is so great. And I say this even when the Wolves weren't that great. I mean – people would come to the games, and this is a basketball state, man. People know the game here, and they're very basketball savvy in this market. So I just think that I've always said if you win, they'll come. If you win, they'll come and they'll be loud, and it's going to be awesome. So I look forward to each and every home game. Love it. Great vibes. And just keep it rolling.
Yeah. And one last thing from me, multiple people, and I'm not joking about this, multiple people in the comments going back a few weeks, many requests on YouTube to see, I'm going to blank on the name. Did you call it the world's greatest travel bag? people want to see it, Jim. So you're going to have to get that in camera frame at some point.
I'll take a picture of it.
Yeah.
And I will tag you guys.
Text, okay. Yeah, put it out on social or text it over. We'll put it up on the YouTube channel.
The world's greatest bag, man. The world's greatest bag.
Yeah, people wanted to see it. It was the talk of the YouTube comments, that podcast.
Gotcha.
Amazing. All right, Jim, Pete, good luck with Wally Zerbiak's recommended picks, and we'll talk again next
week. Wally! All right.
There he is, Jim Peterson here on Flagrant Howls, your favorite Timberwolves lifestyle podcast.